Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with my friend, Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you?
Well, we'd both be a little bit better, except for the last, what was it, 30 seconds of that game? Ish.
Well, 17 seconds. Well, 30 if you count the extra.
Overtime. Yeah. So, Bruce, we're going to do our two good things, two bad things and two numbers podcast on the Oilers 2-1 overtime loss in Anaheim. And let's start out with your good thing.
Okay. My good thing is that the go-ahead goal, of course, this was a 0-0 game deep into the third period. And the Oilers go-ahead goal, the work of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who first of all drew the penalty that put the Oilers on the power play. And then on the power play, he made a crucial defensive play to stop what looked to be a possible breakaway for Anaheim, where he tied up the guy's stick, enabled the Oilers to recover the puck, and then went down to the good end of the ice and took a good feed from McDavid and rattled it in off the short side post to beat the otherwise unbeatable John Gibson.
It was a fantastic play by Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. He had some good moments. That second line was a little bit underwhelming except for him. Spooner, Ryan Spooner, man, he has yet to find his game at Edmonton. I don't know, cruising around out there. I don't know how long Hitchcock's going to tolerate that. But that was a fantastic play by Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And what I notice about him, Bruce, is when he shoots from a little bit outside the slot, he's still a very dangerous shooter from that position because his eyes are up and he can pick spots better than any other Oilers player, actually, shooting from that high slot. Now that was a one-timer shot, of course, but a grade A chance because of that. But his eyes are up when he shoots, and a lot of players aren't. And because of that, he's a very, very dangerous shooter. So I wouldn't mind seeing him back with on the McDavid line. I think that's the Oilers' best look. We'll see. I'm willing to, Hitchcock is figuring this out, and maybe he's seeing how well the team can do with McDavid and Draisaitl together. But that's stacking that one line. I still don't think it's the best look overall for the Edmonton Oilers. Okay, my good thing, Bruce, is the play of the play of two different defensemen. I thought Adam Larson was fantastic. He got one really great scoring chance, I think, where Draisaitl set him up coming down the slot. I thought he was strong and smart with the puck all night long. Now, you might fault him a little bit on the winning goal by the Ducks, but I really think the tying goal by the Ducks. But really, that was more on Klefbom was the main net front guy there, and he just kind of got knocked out of position or found himself out of position and was a little bit soft on that goal. And Lucic had wandered over to the corner there and where he shouldn't have been. And that left the slot open a little bit too much. Those two players, Klefbom and Lucic, had primary responsibility in that moment. And because Brodzik had gone out to the point to block the shot. So Larson, maybe you could fault him a little bit. He was also part of the group that lost the battle on that goal, but it wasn't primarily on him. And other than that, Bruce, he was the best defenseman on the Oilers. And it wasn't that close. I thought was kind of a tower of power. I mean, this game really highlights for me the need for another defenseman on this team. They just really do struggle to move the puck. And Matt Benning was missing wide open passes throughout the game. I can't wait to see this new guy go in, Weidman go in and take his spot in the lineup. I suspect that's going to happen because my other good thing was Kevin Gravel, who is big and mobile, and he's a little nervous out there. He looks like he's running around a little bit, but he generally gets the job done and make a good play. So I'm starting to be a little bit of a fan, at least in a third pairing role. I mean, I wish they had signed Brandon Davidson, and because I think he would have been better than, he would have been better than Garrison or Gravel that we've seen all year long as the third pairing guy. But Gravel's starting to get the job done, so he and Larson are my good thing this game. What is any thoughts on those guys? Or
Larson did have a strong game. I like Gravel out of that third pairing, and the second pairing had a pretty pretty strong game in terms of possession. I don't know what the scoring chance accounts were, but the Russell Nurse pairing was in very little trouble, out shooting the Ducks 10-2 while they were on the ice. So that's a very strong, by that metric at least, showing that they kept the puck away from their own net and contributed a little bit probably to the offense at the other end.
Well, Nurse
and Russell
Nurse was out for a cut. Nurse made big mistakes on two grade A chances against mm-hmm. an even strength. Yeah. They allowed a slot shot off the – oh, no, excuse me. That was a power play chance against where Nurse – and so just one. And really, Nurse wasn't to blame. That was Dreisaitl's turnover early in the third
– is this the one that went to video review? Was it that one?
Yes, that's right. So earlier on, Dreisaitl makes a pretty horrendous turnover, and then you think he makes another mistake in the D zone. Nurse also made a mistake on that play. Allowing the pass out. He was part of the group. Him and Nugent Hopkins and Dreisaitl didn't pick up that.
And Russell made the big play to box the guy out and pull the puck off the
huge edge absolutely, of the goal. Absolutely, absolutely huge play. So, Bruce, that leads into my bad thing, mm-hmm. which was Dreisaitl. He was fine on the power play, but at even strength, wasn't that impressed. I mean, though McDavid and he play well together. Kajula, I thought, actually was holding down that line tonight. Pucks were going through his legs, and he's just not up to snuff. I'd rather see Ratty. I think he's a slightly better player than Kajula. But Dreisaitl made a bad turnover on that play, and then he got beat in his own zone for the pass out. And then in the overtime, I mean, not only did he, you know, this is going to happen, right? It's overtime and it's wide open. So he got beat on the breakaway pass, but he just can't let himself be beat there, Bruce. He can't have that happen. And then he gives up the rebound because he does the flyby on the chance. And Raquel puts in the second shot.
This is one of the great variables of overtime is with the two forwards and one defender on each team that you always wind up with a mismatch of a forward on a forward. And it doesn't matter how elite the forward is that's on the defensive side of things. Chances are he's at a disadvantage against a good attacking player on the other team, which Rickard Rakell obviously is. And anyway, it was a well-executed play by Anaheim. That pass was
McDavid should have been a little, like, might have got, you know, you don't allow a pass right up the center of the ice either, right? Like, that's also on him a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's that old trickster. Randy Carlyle. Remember the last time the Oilers played these guys in overtime?
And the Ducks I heard the word you almost said there.
The Ducks won the faceoff, and they took control of the puck, and they just skated back in circles around their own end for a minute and 20 seconds until Dreisaitl and McDavid went off. And then as soon as they went off, the Ducks attacked and scored. So the first thing they do is they win the faceoff, and they dangle backwards slow, and they just lulled them to sleep right off the bat. Yeah. And then bang, right away, they went with that long, like it was as long as a stretch pass can be, David, because the guy was basically on his own boards, and he hit Raquel right at the far blue line.
Not a bad bet, because if you first get Klefbom to take the forward, and then the other forward moves up, Dreisaitl's got to take him, right?
Getzlaf just sort of dummied Klefbom out of position so that the other guy was isolated, and it worked to perfection. I mean, you got to give kudos with where due, even if it's somebody that you personally detest, like Randy Carlyle. You got to give the devil his due.
Yeah, if you're thinking about it, like, you can think that's the play. Like, where if we're going to beat McDavid and Dreisaitl in overtime, how are we going to do it? Well, let's try to suck them deep and suck the defenseman with the one forward, and then try to isolate that other forward on a one-on-one play on a breakout pass. Mm-hmm. And good. That's a hell of a good pointing that out, Bruce. Carlisle, no doubt to plan that out, and he's a cagey guy. Good for him. He got his team a point there. I mean, the good news is the Oilers got a loser point in today's NHL. So that was they don't have many loser points this year.
By having the 1-0 lead dissipate with 20 seconds left, they lost 1 point to every team in their conference, and they lost 3 points to Anaheim, who gained 2 points when they were looking right down the barrel of zero. This is a real painful one. Because Anaheim,
you're being awfully negative at the moment, Bruce.
Well, I can't help it. They were sick, man. Like, you got to put those games away. I mean, sometime, sooner or later, the Oilers are going to have to learn how to friggin' put Anaheim to bed.
Yeah, I was tired of this. Yeah. I was good with the identity line. I like calling them the grind line myself. I was good with them all game long, but I was getting a little worried. I was thinking, okay, are you really going to go off them in the last minute? I would have rather seen McDavid and Drysdale, like, call a timeout and get those guys out
there.
There
was no whistles. McDavid line dumped it deep with 1:20 to go, and there was never another whistle. And they got it out once. Cassian dumped it out, and Lucic, pursued it into Anaheim territory, but he was never going to win that race, of course. And it came down into Edmonton's end, and they just cycled and cycled and cycled, and finally they got a free point shot and a lucky bounce, like they always get.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know about the grind line as a shutdown line, Bruce. I think it might be good as a third against the other team's third line, or maybe even their second line, but there's a little bit lacking speed there. Like, that
I'd rather have Nuge out there than
Nuge, Drysdale, and McDavid.
Well, McDavid and Drysdale just legitimately played a shift, but Nuge was on the bench, and they had Lucic and Cassian, and basically it's a penalty kill situation, right? Lucic never ever kills penalties. To me, 5-on-6, you got to have penalty killers out there, because you're playing against an odd man situation. It's just an overloaded power play for the other team.
Yeah, you're right. Get Nugent Hopkins out there. But
anyway, I'm not going to dump on Hitchcock necessarily, but Lucic got to make some kind of defensive play, or, you know.
Yeah, and he did get
kind of wandering around, and then he wound up not being able to check the guy that put the puck in the net. So
yeah, fair enough. All right, did you give your bad thing yet?
No, I didn't. I'm going to actually give my bad thing to the guys that make these cheap binders, you know, these things. And they just don't stand up to Oilers versus Ducks games. This is the third binder I've broken now in about the last 5 years. One was against Calgary, and the other two were against the Ducks. It was when they scored with the goalie out, and the game was up this close to being won, and the Oilers fell apart, and I just slammed the thing on my knee. You know, I'm a fan blogger here. Let's keep in mind that there are rooting interests at stake here. And when you keep getting beat by hated rivals like that, it's sometimes the emotions take over. But you think these actual clapboard binders would hold up a little better than this, eh?
I guess that's your secret superpower, Bruce, is breaking those things.
Jesus.
You know, we are fans, Bruce, and that means that the highs are going to be too high and the lows are going to be too low on this podcast.
That's part of the nature of fandom. When you take a hard defeat, it lands hard. This one landed really freaking hard on me. These guys. I hate this team, the Ducks. I hate them.
I hate them.
They just have these magical powers. I mean, just wait till we get to our numbers.
Okay. Let's end with your number because it's a better number. My number is actually a kind of a positive number. It's 5. The Oilers had it. So the scoring chances were 8-8 for the grade A chances. So very equal. And I thought actually both Koskinen and Gibson were fantastic in the nets.
Mm-hmm.
And but the Oilers power play, how they didn't score on that first power play. They had four. I counted 4 grade A chances. There might have been one that isn't. You'll have to see for yourself. But I counted 4 grade A chances in that 2-minute power play. And, man, they were dangerous. And so 5 of the Oilers' 8 grade A chances were on the power play, including the winning goal by Nugent Hopkins. And if the Oilers were going to score. Yeah, excuse me.
So woulda, coulda, winning goal.
Yeah. Yeah, I was counting my chickens.
Well, they were doing everything right. That's the frustrating part. Like, it's not like they were getting pounded and the one finally went in. Really, that was the only look Anaheim had, it seemed to me, down the stretch. But
let me just have a check here on the scoring chances. So there was that play early where Russell saved their bacon.
Yeah.
And then there was a slight scoring chance. The puck went in on net on a good shot, and there was a rebound, and then the rebound chance, Koskinen, I think that's the play, Koskinen and Benning got beat. So there was one more grade A chance, about 6 minutes left. And then there was the, yeah, so there was just the three in the third period and one of them went in. So not good. Okay, Bruce, what is your, because we're working up here to the bad of all bad. The bad of all bad things in terms of the Oilers and the Anaheim Ducks, and that is the number you're about to drop like an A-bomb of despair on our listeners.
Yeah, it's seven. And that's seven straight goals that Anaheim has scored against Edmonton with their goalie pulled. Seven in a row. Now, it's not seven different games tied up. It's four different games tied up. Once, it's still the one that stings the most. Game five of the 2017 playoff series when Oilers led 3-0 with 3.5 minutes to play, and Anaheim pulled their goalie and scored three different times to tie that one up, including a cheesy bounce off of Draisaitl's backside and into the net and various other stuff. And the Ryan Kesler tugging Talbot's pad, that was a tying goal. So three on that one. Then there was a game in Anaheim last year where the Oilers led 5-3 with 21 seconds left. They scored to make it 5-4, and then they scored again to tie it up 5-5. The Oilers actually did manage to win it in the shootout eventually, but they gave Anaheim a point that, you know, when you're leading by two goals with 30 seconds left, that game's got to be put to bed. And then last year, the last game in Edmonton, the Ducks scored on a... the Oilers had the lead, and the Ducks pulled their goalie, and some guy fired some pass out from the boards and hit Nurse on the backside and bounced into the net to tie it up, and the Ducks won that one on the rope-a-dope overtime. And now this. So this is like four different times in the last, since April of 2017, like a year and a half ago. It's four times the Oilers had a lead right into the last dying part of the game against Anaheim, and given up that lead when Anaheim had their goalie on the bench, and they just don't seem to have an answer for the Ducks 5-6. Honestly, David, I've been watching hockey for 55 years. I have never, ever seen one team have such a string of good/bad fortune on the goalie out situation as we've seen on the Anaheim versus Edmonton side of this rivalry. And it leads to broken binders, man. Sorry for audio listeners, you missed the visual prop of my busted binder, but
that's a clipboard.
I did it at clipboard. Yeah, I did it. Sorry, in good. It is a clipboard. You're right. I've been using the wrong word, haven't I?
So, Bruce, the Oilers are now 22 games, 10 wins, 10 losses, and 2 overtime losses. Now, some people will say they're 500. Mm-hmm. They are not 500. They are 10 wins and 12 losses. Even by the NHL's nomenclature, they have 10 losses in regulation time and 2 losses in overtime. Right. So that's 10 wins and 12 losses. So please stop saying they're 500 if you're saying that. That's one of my pet peeves, because they really are losses. They're not ties. They're losses.
And if you want to count the overtime, yeah. They're 6, 10, and 6 in regulation time. And then of the 6 overtimes, they won 4 and lost 2.
Just wait.
But overall, they've lost more than half the games.
There's 6, 10, and 6?
In regulation.
Six regulation
wins, 10 losses. And then in the 6 overtime games, they won 4, lost 2.
Okay, gotcha. All right. I was
10 understand. Wins altogether, but 4 times the other team got the point.
So 6 wins in regulation, 4 wins in overtime. 10 losses in regulations, 2 losses in overtime. 10 and 12 overall.
10 and 12, yeah.
Yeah, 10 and 12. You got to get to real 500 if you want to make the playoffs in the NHL.
Oh, yeah, you must get there and beyond.
Yeah.
And you got to learn to put games away, or alternately, when you're down by a goal and you pull your goalie, maybe once every year or so, maybe it would be good for you to score a goal and tie a game up, which the Oilers 6-on-5, I mean, that's a whole nother nightmare. It's been brutal for years.
So, Bruce, do you think we'll see Koskin again next game?
That's a good question.
I sure hope so. I do not. He had another good game. There's no reason to go to Talbot. He should be rested.
Yeah, Hitchcock's, I mean, he's walking a fine line because he doesn't want to lose Talbot either. So we'll see. I mean, it's a interesting call, and he could I'll just stand back and say this is coach's decision, and we'll only criticize him when he makes the wrong decision.
Well, the wrong decision is playing Talbot.
Oh, okay, you criticize him in advance if he plays Talbot. I'll just say the coach is trying to get all 23 of his guys on board, and
Okay, forget what he's going to do. Would you make any lineup changes for the next game?
Oh, man. Well,
I would definitely take out Benning and put in the Weidman.
Yeah, we might see that. Benning's having trouble making the pass. He's having trouble making the pass, man, and it's hurting.
Anything else that you would do?
Cooper Marody, this is three times in four games. I don't think he saw the ice in the third period. I do know he played a total of 3 minutes and 19 seconds today. So that's three times that he's been under 5 minutes. So I guess he's getting a little bit of NHL exposure here, but if they don't trust him to play him even 5 minutes in a game, then they're rushing him. So maybe they're better off to have a different player, you know, even sitting in the press box and using, switching out and bringing in the other forward.
I'd switch out Jujhar Khaira. I just thought he was rats. Like, he just wasn't puck protecting. He was giving away the puck. What is he doing out there? I mean, I guess he's on the penalty kill and
Missed a tap and McDavid set him up on the edge of the crease. All he had to do was touch the puck.
Was there a replay of that? Because I couldn't tell if the pass was like
over a stick or under a stick or through.
If his stick was on the ice, I don't want to judge him, because if his stick was on the ice and the pass wasn't there, then that's a different thing. But I'm not sure that. I'm not sure of the play. But there was other plays where he was just so sleepwalking and tired, like lazy on the puck.
Losing the puck off the boards in the defensive zone, that's been a problem that he's had a lot of this year.
I don't know why Marody's in the doghouse. Marody's played like in his 3 minutes. He puck protects down. Makes a good play on the offensive end. I would like to see him more. So, but I might be a minority of one Oilers fan saying that. Who do they have in the stands right now anyway? Like, what are their options even?
Well, they have, what's his name?
Patrick
Russell. And they have eight defensemen at the moment.
Bench Khaira and put in Patrick Russell, and bench Benning and put in Weidman. That's what I would do. There you go. And you'll see what the coach does, which is fair enough.
That's right. I mean, those are reasonable suggestions. I was just thinking specifically of the goalies. Like, he has competing short-term and long-term interests at heart, Hitchcock. And winning Talbot's confidence and showing confidence in Talbot might be the play.
Bruce, Talbot has got to – he's got to earn it. He's got to get in a game. Like, until Koskinen plays poorly, I would stick with Koskinen.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
And Talbot's been horrible all year. Why would you risk it? And they've got to win. Send the message to him. Play well. Make a save. And you'll get into the game. Next time you get a chance. Next time our top guy, just like with you when you were the top guy, we rode you. And this isn't actually riding Koskinen. And there's a big break between games here. So go with Koskinen. And you're not going to lose Talbot. I mean, he's got to play well, Bruce. He's in a contract year Like, what is he going to do? Pout? I'm going to let in the first goal because coach didn't play me for 2 weeks. There is a point where he'll start to get rusty, but I definitely would. They all these games are must win until they get back to real 500. And anyway, that's what I would do. All right, Bruce, let's leave it there.
Yeah. Game grades to come.
Thanks for talking.
I was so close. I was so close, David, to a 1-0. And they, you know, they really did almost button it down, but it's just so frustrating.
Yeah.
These guys of all teams.
Yeah. All right, Bruce. Thanks for talking, man.
Yeah. See you on Sunday night.
Yeah. And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.
You're right, it's a clipboard.